recognize the young woman, who was barely more than a girl, with long blonde hair and a lean face. Where had Maracy seen her before? She thought for a moment, then sidled up to one of the reporters to read over her shoulder. Breezy day, blah, blah, air of violent suspense, whatever that means. There! Attended by the curious ministrations of Miss Sophie Tarxell, the inventor's daughter. Sophie Tarxell. She'd been making an uproar, writing opinion pieces in the broadsheets about her father, who had supposedly been a great inventor, though Maracy had never heard or read his name before those articles.
"People of Ellendale,"
Governor Innate said, and Maracy was surprised by how his voice echoed across the square, loud and clear. Something to do with those devices, apparently.
"The papers would have you believe that this evening we stand on the brink of a crisis. But I assure you, no such problem exists. My brother was not the criminal they are condemning him to have been."
"Oh, Innate," Maracy thought, sighing to herself as she wrote. "That's not why they're here." Nobody had come to hear more about Windsting. What about the city's real problems?
"I will not suffer this defamation of my dear brother's character,"
Innate continued.
"He was a good man, a statesman and philanthropist. You might have forgotten the Hub Beautification Project that he spearheaded just 3 years ago, but I have not."
He continued in that vein. Maracy dutifully took notes for Captain Aradel, but she shook her head. Innate's goal was understandable. He hoped to preserve his family's reputation in the eyes of important investors and noblemen, and perhaps deflate some of the public anger. It wouldn't work. The people didn't actually care about Windsting. It was the deeper corruption, the feeling of powerlessness, that was destroying this city. As the speech progressed, laboring with explanations of how good a man Windsting had been, Maracy edged to the side in an attempt to get a better view. How was Innate responding to the crowd? He was charismatic. She could hear that even from the way he spoke. Maybe he was doing some good with his oratory alone, even if the speech lacked substance.
"A full investigation of the constables will be ordered,"
Innate continued.
"I am not convinced my brother was killed, as they say. My sources posit this might all be the result of a bungled raid, using my brother as willing bait to catch criminals. If that is true, and they put my brother in harm's way and are now covering it up, the responsible parties will answer for it."
Maracy moved to the side, but her view was obstructed by one of the guards who stepped in front of her. Annoyed, Maracy moved again, and again the guardsman moved. She'd have considered it deliberate if his back hadn't been to her.
"As for the floods in the east, we are sending relief. Your friends and relatives there shall be succored. We stand with them in the face of this disaster."
"Not good," she noted. "The people don't want to hear about aid going outside the city, no matter how necessary, not while things are going worse and worse here." Maracy moved again. Aradel wanted her to judge the public's reaction, but she needed a better view. Her shuffling earned her a curse of annoyance from one of the reporters, and she finally got a sight of Innate on his podium. He moved into a longer rant against the press. Perhaps that was why the reporter had been so testy. She certainly would be. Maracy frowned. That guardsman who had been moving and shuffling and blocking her view had turned, and she could see a very odd expression on his face, like a grimace of pain. And he was whispering. At least his mouth was moving. Nobody else seemed to notice him, as they were focused on the speech. So Maracy was the first one to scream as the guardsman pulled a revolver from underneath his coat and leveled it at the governor. Wayne prowled around the dead woman's room. It was too clean. A room where people lived should have a healthy amount of clutter. Miss Steelrunner hadn't spent much time here. In the other room, Wax inspected the body. Wayne left him to that. He had no interest in poking at a corpse's insides, even if Wax claimed it was important. Wayne, instead, went looking for more interesting bits of life. His first discovery was a small cache of bottles in a cabinet under the bathroom wash basin. Various forms of alcohol, the harder stuff, each a little gone. All save one, which was empty. Wayne gave it a sniff. Port. Not surprising, he thought. He took the whiskey and gave it a good swig. Blech! Too much bite, and far too warm. He took another swig as he spun about in the main room. These fancy neighborhoods were too quiet. People should be shouting outside. That was right for the city. He checked the trunk beside her sleeping pallet and found it contained three outfits, each clean and carefully folded. The terrace robes were on the bottom. Creases had set. These weren't worn often. The other two were modern designs, the one on top more daring than the one below. He took another swig of whiskey and wandered back into the room with the corpse. Wax had removed his hat and coat and knelt beside the body in his vest and slacks. "You found the alcohol, I see," Wax said. "How uncharacteristic." Wayne grinned, offering the bottle to Wax, who took a small swig.
"Ugh,"
he noted, handing it back. "This murder is troubling, Wayne."
"I'm sure she felt so."
"Too many questions. Why did she leave the village, and why choose to live here? It doesn't feel very terrace."
"Oh, I can tell you why she was here," Wayne said.
"Well?"
"Think of yourself as a sheltered terrace woman in her 40s, Wayne said. "Old enough to have missed the chance to be a wild youth and starting to wish you'd done something more daring."
"The terrace don't long for wildness," Wax said, taking notes in a little book as he inspected the woman's wound. "They aren't daring. They're a reserved people."
"Ain't we terrace?"
"We're exceptions."
"Everyone's an exception to something, Wax. This girl, she left the village and found a whole world out here. She must have had an adventurous side."
"Whiskey." "She did," Wax admitted. "I didn't know her well, but she'd sneak out of the village as a youth. That was long ago."
"And she left again," Wayne said, "on account of the village being so dull as to bore the sense out of a scribe. Hell, even Steris would hate that place."
"Wayne."
"Our miss," Wayne said, waving the bottle toward the dead woman. "She tried to remain conservative at first, so she got a job as a clerk, a good terrace occupation. She convinced herself that a nice apartment, where she was safe from the supposed horrors of lesser neighborhoods, was worth the expense. Simple stuff. But then some workers at the jeweler took her out and she let herself drink. She liked that. Awakened memories of sneaked drinks as a youth. She wanted more, so she bought a whole mess of different kinds of spirits to try them all out. She liked port best, by the way."
"Makes sense," Wax said.
"Now we find her with increasingly liberal dresses, showing more skin, spending more evenings out. Give her a few more months and she'd have turned into a right proper girl to have a good time with."
"Whiskey." "She didn't get a few more months," Wax said softly. He took something from his own pocket and handed it out to Wayne. A book, bound in leather, pocket-sized. "Have a look through this." Wayne took it, flipping through some pages.
"What is it?"
"The book that Death gave me." Marcy's shout was lost in the roar as the governor ended his speech. Polite applause from the nobility, shouts and curses from most of the workers. The noise swallowed her shout like a single splash in a breaking tide. She fumbled for her handbag as the guard in the dark coat sighted with his gun at the governor. No, there wasn't time for her gun. She had to do something else. She jumped for the man and slowed time. She had metal in her this time. She'd made sure, after being embarrassed this morning. Her allomancy created a bubble of greatly slowed-down time, enveloping herself, the would-be assassin, and a few bystanders. She grabbed the man around the legs, but her speed bubble did the real work, trapping him inside, as everyone outside became a blur. The man squeezed his gun's trigger, and the crack of a gunshot rang amid the strange warping of sounds that she heard inside a bubble from those outside. One of his fellow guards, also caught in her bubble, shouted in alarm. The fired bullet hit the perimeter of the speed bubble and was deflected. It shot out over the blur of the crowd, the governor's figure vanishing as, she assumed, he was rushed away. Maracy's lunge wasn't enough to topple the would-be assassin, and so she lay there, half on the steps, holding on to his legs and feeling foolish, until one of his companions hit him harder, knocking him down. She dropped the speed bubble and jumped back, the sudden roar of the crowd washing over her. The captured man struggled, shouting, as other guards piled onto him.
"So basically, with this hemallergy," Wax said, "you can make someone metalborn."
Wayne sniffled as he flipped through the book, and his cheeks were breaking out in some kind of rash.
"Storing health," Wax thought.
Wayne often ended up with rashes when he did that. They sat in the main room of Idashwi's apartment, away from the corpse, which they'd draped with a sheet. They'd paused briefly in their inspection to send the newsboy for the local constables. Wax ground his teeth. Idashwi's wound, it was just like those described in the book. Somebody had killed this woman with a spike through the chest, stealing her ferrochemical talent. The book described the process as tearing off a chunk of someone's soul. Using the spike, one could effectively attach that piece of soul to one's own, granting the powers of the deceased. In the old days, inquisitors had driven the spike right through the body of the one to be killed into the body of the person to gain the powers. That prevented any power from being lost. Apparently, coating the newly made spike in blood could achieve a similar effect.
He knew, Wax thought. Iron Eyes knew something like this was going to come.
The book had been written by the Lord Mistborn long ago to leave some record of the art known as hemallergy. Lesterborn's book said he considered it a crime that the words of Founding, Harmony's own record, omitted references to the dark art.
"So our killer knows this hemallergy stuff?" Wayne said.
"Yes," Wax said. "The killer used a spike to steal Idashwi's ferrochemical talent, then employed that ability to kill Lord Winsting and his guests. We have to assume that our killer could also have numerous other powers at their disposal. Any combination of allomantic or ferrochemical abilities. Or all of them."
Wayne whistled softly. "Did you discover anything else in your search of the room?" Wax asked.
"Not much."
"I understand the motive here," Wax said, glancing back toward the kitchen with the body. "But I don't yet have one for Winsting's murder. Or, well, I know of too many possibilities. I don't have the right motive."
"What did you find in the stiff's pockets?"
Wax hesitated.
"You didn't rifle through the pockets?"
Wayne asked, aghast.
"Wax, you're a terrible grave robber."
"I was distracted by the manner of death," Wax said, rising. "I'd have gotten to it."
The word distracted didn't really do justice to his emotions, to the profound shock, the numbness. For months, that book had only been an object of study. But now its contents had abruptly ceased being mere words on a page and had become a motive for murder.
"We're out of our depth," Wax thought, returning to the kitchen. "We've crept into the realm of the gods. Harmony, Iron Eyes, the Lord Mistborn."
Wayne pulled back the sheet, exposing that gaping hole in the woman's chest, right at the sternum. Who would know how to do something like this? Who would Harmony let know how to do something like this?
"Here,"
Wayne said, fishing in the woman's shirt pockets. He came out with a folded-up piece of paper. He unfolded it, then grunted.
"Huh. It's for you."
Wax's stomach plummeted. Wayne slowly turned the paper around. It was a sheet ripped from a ledger, filled with numbers and sums. Scrawled across it in a different hand was a single sentence, a familiar sentence. The very words Bloody Tan had said before jerking Lessie right into the path of Wax's bullet, making him kill the woman he loved. "Someone else moves us, lawman."
7.
"Look, Wax,"
Wayne said as the two of them entered Ladrian Mansion.
"I saw Tan's body. You shot him square in the head. That bloke was deader than a stuffed lion in a hunting lodge. It ain't him. What if he was secretly metal-born? Wax asked. Miles could have survived a shot to the head.
Doesn't work that way, mate,
Wayne said, shutting the door and tossing his coat at Darian's. It hit the butler in the face.
If you're a bloodmaker, you've got a healer head wound right as it's happening. Once a bloke is actually dead, no power, alimantic or ferrochemical, is bringing him back.
I saw him, Wayne, twice. Once while chasing the marksman and then just earlier today.
Master,
Darian said, folding Wayne's coat,
new equipment has arrived for you from Miss Renette. She asked if you'd be willing to test it.
Oh, ruin, Wayne said. Oh, mister, what did she leave for me?
She said I was to slap you,
Darian admitted.
Oh, she does care. See that, Wax? She cares!
Wax nodded absently as Wayne tried to force Darian's to slap him across the rear, which he doubted was what Renette had intended.
Sir,
Darian's said, turning away from Wayne's proffered posterior,
in addition to the package, Lady Harms awaits you in the sitting room.
Wax hesitated, impatient to go upstairs. He needed time to think, preferably with his earring in, and to go through Renette's package. They were always very interesting. But he couldn't simply ignore Steris.
Thank you, Darian's, Wax said. Send a note to my grandmother at the village that says we found the missing Terrace woman, but someone had gotten to her and, regretfully, killed her before we arrived. Say the constables will explain the rest and may have questions for her.
Very well, my lord.
Wax pushed his way into the sitting room. Steris rose to greet him, and Wax kissed her hand.
I don't have a lot of time, Steris.
You've sunk your teeth in, then, she said, eyeing him up and down. I suppose this could be useful. If you catch the murderer of the governor's brother, it will be politically favorable.
Unless I drag some corpses out into the light.
Well, perhaps we can prepare for that,
she said.
Lady Zobel's party. You are still planning to attend with me?
Rusts. He'd forgotten all about it.
Our invitation has gone missing. I suspect Wayne is to blame, but it doesn't matter. You're lord of a great house. They won't turn us away.
Steris, I don't know if I have the time.
The governor is attending, Steris said. You could speak with him about his brother.
More meaningless conversation, Wax thought. More dances and political games. He needed to be working, hunting. Bloody tan.
His eye twitched.
There was some talk of the governor not attending, Steris said, considering what happened today. However, I have it on the best authority that he will come. He doesn't want to appear to have anything to hide in these parlous times.
Wax frowned. Wait, what happened today?
Assassination attempt on the governor, Steris said. You really don't know?
I've been busy. Rusts. Someone tried to kill him? Who?
Some deranged man, Steris said. Not in his right mind. They caught him, I'm told.
I'll need to talk to the suspect, Wax said, walking for the door. It might be connected.
He wasn't a credible threat, Steris said. By all reports, the man's aim was terrible. He didn't come close to hitting his intended victim. Waxillium?
Wayne!
Wax said, shoving open the door.
We've got
on it already,
Wayne said, holding up a broadsheet from the table. Evening edition. Wax had a subscription. The top line read, Bold attack on the governor in daylight. Wayne tossed Wax's hat off the rack, then snapped his fingers toward the butler, who was in the process of hanging Wayne's duster in the coat closet. Darian sighed, getting it back out and carrying it over.
I'll try to make the party, Wax said to Steris, pulling his hat on. If I'm not back, feel free to go without me.
Steris folded her arms.
Oh, I suppose I should take the butler instead, then.
If you like.
Be careful about that, Steris, Wayne added. Wax's butlers have a tendency to explode.
Wax gave him a glare, and the two of them charged out the door toward the coach.
You still need private time for that thinking of yours? Wayne asked.
Yes.
Never touch the stuff myself, Wayne said. Causes headaches. Hey, Oid!
Can I catch a ride up there with you?
The new coachman shrugged, making room for Wayne on top of the carriage. Wayne climbed up, and Wax stepped inside. This wouldn't be ideal, but it would have to do. He pulled down the window shades, then settled back as the coach began rolling. He took his earring out of his pocket, the earring of the Pathian religion. His was special. He'd been hand-delivered it under mysterious circumstances. Lately, though, he had avoided wearing it, as the book made clear what it must be. Long ago, a small spike of metal like this had allowed people to communicate with ruin and preservation, gods of the ancient world. It was hemallergy. Had this earring, then, been made by killing someone? Hesitantly, he slipped it in.
Unfortunately, a voice said in his mind, your fears about the earring are correct. It is a hemallergic spike.
Wax jumped, throwing open the carriage door with alomancy, preparing his escape, while pulling out vindication. Rusts, he'd heard that voice as if someone were sitting beside him.
Firing that gun would not have the effect you want, I think, the voice said. Even if you could see me, shooting at me would merely ruin the furnishings of your coach, costing precisely 84 boxings to repair when Miss Grimes takes it to the shop next week. You'd be left with a new wood panel on the coach body just behind me, which would never quite match those around it.
Wax breathed in and out. Harmony?
Yes,
the voice said.
You're here, in my coach.
Technically, I am everywhere.
Wax trembled, mouth going dry. He forced himself to close the door and sit back down.
Tell me,
the voice said in his head.
What were you expecting to happen when you put in the earring, if not this?
Wax slid vindication back into her holster.
I wasn't expecting an answer so promptly. And my reflexes tend to be on the jumpy side lately. Your deificness?
You may call me Harmony, or Lord, if you must.
The voice sounded amused.
Now, about what do you wish to speak?
You know.
Better to hear you say it.
Better for you to hear me say it, Wax said, or for me to hear myself say it?
Both.
Am I insane? Wax asked.
If you were, speaking to a figment of your delusion would certainly not diagnose that fact.
You're not helping much.
Then ask better questions, Waxillium.
Wax leaned forward.
He clasped his hands before him. You're real.
You've heard my voice. You've followed my path.
A few whispered words when I was in a moment of great stress, when I was gravely wounded, Wax said. Words I've doubted ever since. This is different. This is more real.
You need to hear it then, do you?
The voice said. It sounded as clear and ordinary as if someone normal, someone visible, sat there talking to him.
Very well. I am Harmony, the hero of ages, once called Sezed. At the end of one world, I took upon myself the powers of protection and destruction, and in so doing became the caretaker of the world to come. I am here, Waxillium, to tell you that you are not insane.
Bloody Tan lives.
Not exactly.
Wax frowned.
There are beings in this world who are neither human nor Kolos, something related to both. You call them the Faceless Immortals.
Khandra, Wax said. Like Tensun, the Guardian. Or the person who gave me this earring.
They can take the corpses of the dead and use their bones to mimic a person who has died. They wear bodies like you wear clothing, changing back and forth as they wish. They were created by the Lord Ruler using hemallergy.
Your holy book gives few details about their organization, Wax said. But everyone knows that the Faceless Immortals are your servants.
not murderers.
Any being has choice,
Harmony said.
Even Kolos have the power to choose. This one, the being who wears Bloody Tan's body, has not made very good choices.
Who is he?
She is a member of the third generation, and you should know better than to assume everyone dangerous to be a male. Pa'alm was what we called her, but she has chosen the name Bleeder for herself. Waxillium, Bleeder is ancient, older than the destruction of the world, almost as old as the final empire. Indeed, she is even older than I am, though not older than my powers. She is crafty, careful, and brilliant, and I'm afraid that she might have gone mad.
The carriage turned a corner. One of your ancient servants, Wax said, has gone mad and is killing people.
Yes.
So stop her.
It is not so simple.
Free will? Wax said, annoyed.
No, not in this case. I can directly control a being who has pierced herself with too much hemallergy. In this case, I would act, for Bleeder has disobeyed her contract with me and opened herself up for my intervention. Something is wrong, unfortunately.
What? Wax asked. God was silent for a time.
I don't know yet.
Wax felt cold. Is that possible?
It appears so. Somehow, Bleeder has figured out how to hide from me. At times I can spot her, but only when she takes direct and obvious action. Unfortunately, she has removed one of her blessings, one of the two spikes that Chandra must keep inside themselves to retain their cognition. I would forcibly control her if I could, but one spike does not pierce the soul sufficiently for me to get in.
Cognition, Wax said. Two spikes are required for the Chandra to be able to think, but she is going around with only one, which means...
Insanity,
Harmony said, his voice softer in Wax's ear.
But something is wrong beyond that. She can hide from me, and while I can speak to her, she doesn't have to listen, and I can't keep track of where she is.
Didn't you say you were everywhere?
My essence is, Harmony said. But this thing that I am, it is more complex than you might expect.
Being God is more complex than a mortal can comprehend, Wax said. What a surprise. Harmony chuckled softly.
Wait, Wax thought.
Did I just get sarcastic with God himself?
Yes, you did,
Harmony said.
It is well. Few act that way toward me, even among the Chandra. It feels good to me, like older times. Since Kelsier... Well, I haven't had much of that.
You can hear my thoughts? Wax asked.
When you have the earring in, yes. I gain the ability to hear your preservation, and the ability to speak to you from ruin. Each had only one half. I always found it puzzling. Regardless, I know you have been reading young Lesterborn's book. I am not pleased that he made it, but I could not forbid you. I will trust that Marsh was wise in giving it to you. Bleeder can use hemallergy, but in a way she should not be able to. Chandra do not have allomantic or ferrochemical powers. She has learned to take these and to use them to maintain her Chandra form. Fortunately, she is limited. She can only use one spike at a time. Otherwise, she will open herself to my control. If she trades spikes, she must do it by ripping out her single one, and then falling onto another, digesting it, and returning her to sapience. I do not know her game within this city, but I'm alarmed by it. She has spent centuries studying human behavior.